Welcome back to 94.7 The Pulse. And as I said before the break, we're talking leadership now. Renee Geruso has been on the show before. I enjoyed the chat so much, she decided to come back again. Renee, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Great to be here, Rob.
Really good to have you back. We touched on some of the key elements that you see in good leadership. You've got 12 superpowers that you talked about to advise what a good leader is. But in the current climate we've got, there's lots of different facets of leadership that I find fascinating. Let's go to the political end. There's leadership that people are looking for, but what we're seeing at the moment is some funny stuff behind the scenes, and it seems to be more leadership to band-aid things rather than to be exciting. What's your thoughts on the way it's playing out?
Yeah, definitely seeing that in Australia, and I'm sure many of the listeners would resonate around the world. I think I have a bit of a saying that leaders need to be transformational leaders, not transactional leaders. And what I mean by that is when you're transactional, it's all about the process. You're quite reactive, and we've seen a lot of that in just this last week in the Australian, political party. Whereas, if leaders are more formational, they're more proactive, and they're all about informing, but in a way that's inspiring. And I think that's missing a bit at the moment. And I think this is in and out of the workplace in any role. It's a good question to ask and take stock of. Am I just, reacting and being impulsive, or am I being intentional and transformational? So looking ahead, not being sort of rigid, stop, start, but actually playing things out with more intention.
It's an interesting observation too, in that the political leadership is different to maybe a company leadership, where your KPIs are about sales, and or if you're in manufacturing, it's about making widgets. So a good leader can be seen as one who makes his staff productive or her staff productive. In the case of politics, though, it's really about remaining in the picture. So you're not actually necessarily creating anything. You're not actually driving productivity. You're just remaining in charge and relevant. What little changes does that make to leadership style?
Yeah, it makes a big, big change. I think it really shows your level of adaptability and innovation. And I think that's what's being tested. And, I think I mentioned last time we spoke, Rob, leaders now and in the future, to survive and be effective and relevant, need to be adaptive, need to be innovative, and need to be collaborative, and those three things all sort of interlink. I think there are a lot of commonalities, when I think of leadership, whether you're leading a sports team, a company, a business, or, the Australian people. I think there are a lot of commonalities, but there's also, you mentioned in the workplace being measured on productivity and output. I'm a big believer that, and it's something I've been speaking to a few clients about, leaders should be being measured, I believe, on retention as a KPI. I think that's something that hasn't been measured as such. It's spoken about, we've had 20% turnover, we've had 80% turnover. But I think if every leader has that accountability, that's actually measured with the right tools and guidance to retain people, it's a bit like the political party retaining that next, having that next seat. We've got the election coming up 21st of May, and we've got a Prime Minister that served us for 9 years that's looking at his fourth, third year term. So, there's a lot behind what people are going to want from that based on where he's been in a very pivotal time, I think, in Australian history.
Well, in the Prime Minister's defence, he's only been there for four, but his party's been there for nine under three different leaders. So there's already been some change. And if you listen to some media commentators, there's a few potentially circling again. So the leader's not only looking out the front of the car, as the Prime Minister often talks, he doesn't want to look in the rear vision mirror, but he also needs to be aware that there might be others within his team who think they can do better, and that adds again a complexity to the leadership. He's got to challenge the thoughts of the voters, but he's also got to keep his team happy.
That's right. That's right. And it is. It's a pretty fine balance, isn't it? At the end of the day.
It is indeed, and it'd be interesting to see it playing out. The other thing is the different things that you have available to your resources to help your leadership. Good leaders, from my experience, tend to put good people in positions, trust them, and let them do their job. But of course, the micromanager types are the ones that want to be in everyone's face all the time. I sense at the moment that what has happened in the past is that the Prime Minister has had confidence in his team to do the job, but I sense at the moment he might be starting to micromanage a little bit as an election's coming up and it's all going to play out. Do you see leaders changing their style depending on circumstances?
Yeah, look, I think we all have certain styles we lean to. You know, like you mentioned, we have the micromanager, which sometimes is needed if somebody's new or out of line, so to speak. We have the leaders that let go a bit. We have the leaders that check in now and again. And then we have the leaders that have what we call a delegation style. I'm a big believer around adaptability. I think you could lead someone in your team four different ways in one day, depending on what the context of the conversation is. So, you know, if I need help with something, even if I've been in the role a while, that might be more instructional and micro, more of a directional conversation, whereas, you know, I could go to my manager and say, hey, I presented something last week, I'm doing it again, I think I'll be fine, but I'd like some feedback after it. That's a different style again. So I think the gold and the gift is knowing what style to use and when. And I think what you mentioned, yeah, there's a lot of micromanaging going on at the moment. And look, it's okay for a while, but it's not sustainable. And I think I have a bit of a saying, Rob, around give people the what, but not the how. Empower them to come up with how to do something. Be there to guide them if needed. But you cannot grow future leaders, you know, in a political party, in a business, in a corporate company, unless you're empowering people to think for themselves, you know, delegate that thinking so that they think for themselves, they're growing, and you as a more senior leader get time back to do things that matter.
Consistency is an interesting word in leadership, because sometimes it can lead to complacency from those underneath the leader. But also, if the leader is inconsistent, from my experience, it also creates fear and uncertainty on how someone will do something because they're not quite sure what the response would be. Is it a trade-off in a leader to be a little bit inconsistent but to have a little bit of fear in his in the underlings?
I think you can be a bit inconsistent, but consistently inconsistent. Like, if that's the way you lead and people know that, but as a leader, I mean, your job is to provide the tools and the info for people to do their best work. And I think trust, you know, for me, I always say, Rob, the opposite of trust is fear. And I don't believe in fear-based leadership. I think if you can build enough trust, when you are a bit inconsistent, the trust has been built, but you've got to build on that continually. You know, not change the way you do things within a day. And a lot of that comes down to it's communication, as you know. That's the key to fundamental to leadership. If you're communicating openly and you're sharing why you're doing what you're doing with your team or your party, your actions then we'll be more congruent with that, and people will understand the bigger picture, and that helps dissipate the fear and grow that trust.
A good leader's got a toolkit. I think most of them don't display them all the time, save some for very special occasions. And the best ones I've seen are certainly compassionate. They're empathetic. They're supportive, but they also do have a sledgehammer, and it sort of sits in the background for to be used only on special occasions. Do you think that's the ideal style that provides the uncertainty but without having that ongoing fear?
Fear, yeah, much, much more. I think I think challenging people to create a bit of doubt in them to grow isn't a bad thing. But, yeah, I'm not a big believer in fear-based leadership. And I love your metaphor there. I think leadership is like having a tool belt of tools that you can pull out as you need them, but also continually grow them. And I have a term, limitless leadership. So a leader that's always learning, unlearning and relearning. So not just getting stuck in their thoughts or their ideas from the past, but always, you know, reevaluating things and reassessing with their team. You know, the best teams we all know are the teams that are a team. It's not I and them, it's we and us.
That was very much the case I was going to bring up about sport, the old days of the fire and brimstone coaching. Yeah. Techniques, which was all about being strong, creating fear and uncertainty. And then I think we changed into all more empathetic, and some perhaps went too far and were easily run over by the team when things got a bit tight. But I think the very best coaches are those that do have that spray tucked away in the back. The players know that it's coming if they don't do the right thing. So I guess that's not so much being fearful of how you perform. It's just knowing that you need to remain focused and concentrate and deliver your best.
That's right. And you know, giving feedback to each other. So giving feedback to your boss and them giving feedback to you and feedback to, you know, to peers and having this open dialogue, there shouldn't be any surprises. And I think that's the best way, you know, to lead, what I say, lead from the front, but lead with and through people.
Let's go across to the other side of the chamber in Parliament and look at Anthony Albanese. He's an interesting opposite type. He's just seems like a really nice bloke. He got into that position at a different time in the party's life. The party's talked about stability, and so he seems very safe. But from where we sit on the outside, and if we're the workers that are looking to our leader for leadership, or in this case, potential leader, you always look in his team and think, oh, he could be better. Oh, that girl there should be the next Prime Minister, not him. So he's operating as if he's an adequate leader, but he's not the best available. That's probably not a good environment to be working in either.
No, I don't think so. And I think what would happen with that is there'd be people that would have differing thoughts on that. And then I think that the cohesion wouldn't be consistent across the team. But, yeah, I think... Look, I think at the end of the day, it's you know, whoever gets in, it's in any leadership role, especially if you're a new leader or you're a leader that's been around for a while, but now you're leading a new team, is to really set those norms and expectations up at the start of what the team want from you, what you want from the team, and what the team wants from the team. And those three questions and that discussion can really open up and, you know, set the scene for success early on.
So in a nutshell, let's pull out a couple of your 12 superpowers before we go. We talked about a few last week, but what are some of the smaller, perhaps unknown ones, but still very vital to being a good leader?
Yeah, I think get comfortable being uncomfortable. I think the best leaders challenge the status quo. And look outside, I say go from your safe zone to your stretch zone. So if you're leading a team and it's all pretty easy and you feel like you could do your job with your eyes shut, you're probably living in a bit of a safe zone and there's no growth there. So get comfortable being uncomfortable, because that can flow through the culture in a good way.
Does that have a dangerous situation where you might just make change for the sake of change to do that?
Yeah, it can, and it's something I always say, don't do change for change's sake, because then we get what we call change fatigue. People just have too much change and they can't deal with it. You know, pick your battles. I think if you involve your team and you all see something that could be challenged, then there's probably merit in it. But if it's just you and no one else, then either you haven't got the reasoning behind it, you haven't articulated that clearly enough, or it's something you should just leave. But, yeah, definitely challenge the right thing for the right reason. But the leaders and the companies and the teams I'm seeing just going from strength to strength are the ones that are doing that. The other one I'd love to just mention, there's quite a few, but leverage a strength-based team. So find out the strengths of everybody in your team and yourself. So what are you good at that you enjoy, not just what you're good at? Find out what those strengths are and leverage those. So if you've got John that doesn't like reporting and spreadsheets, don't get him to do that. Get Mary to do that, who loves that, and get John to help her. And then that way, it's peer. They're leveraging each other. Mary will love sharing what she knows. John's going to learn from Mary, and you as the leader can go and focus on other things to grow your team.
And you'll still get the information that you need from that spreadsheet, and you know it'll be done accurately because you've got John's brain power and Mary's skill set.
And it doesn't get done enough. We tend to go, oh, John's looking a bit lazy. This would be good for his development. You know, that old chestnut. And that doesn't always work out well. And so play to people's strengths and rise as one team, and there'll be so much energy because people will be doing actually what they're good at and they love.
Renee, I love talking to you. Thank you very much again. I look forward to our next chat. I reckon a couple more of these during the election campaign will be really good to see the change in trends. We may even have a change in leader by the next time we talk, because I know there are circles in some parties that would like to see that. But at this stage, we'll deal with the two we've got and their different styles as the pressure goes on. But really appreciate your time this morning.
Absolute pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.